Hello, this is Kelly Woods, soul doula and founder of My Authentic Life. No matter what wrong turns you believe you've taken, the present moment offers a fresh start. Enjoy getting back on track with Aubrey Johnson and the Road to Rediscovery podcast.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow, and of course, uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, as you know, you can get this show anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, we invite you to give a rate and review. Otherwise, please give us some feedback at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. And we'll give you a shout out in a future episode. We are truly, truly grateful for your listenership. My special guest is a New York Times bestselling author, star of Empowered Wives on Amazon Prime, and the host of the Empowered Wife podcast. She has appeared on the Today Show, Good Morning America, and The View. Her mission is to end world divorce. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Laura Doyle to the show. Laura, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
It's great to be here, Aubrey. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. We're pleased to have you for sure, no doubt. So, Laura, if we can start out by just giving the listeners a glimpse into your own journey that led you on the path of helping women in fixing their relationships.
Well, I never set out to do any of that. I was just trying to get my husband to straighten up a little. You know, he was not as tidy. He didn't help out with the chores as much as I thought he should. I thought he could be more romantic. And I definitely thought he should be making more money and just be more ambitious at work. And I was just giving him a few helpful pointers on how he could improve. And he didn't want to spend any time with me for some reason. Not so mysterious to me now or to you either, I'm sure. But at the time, it was pretty devastating because I didn't really understand. And we were having a lot of fights too. We were having either wall-to-wall hostility or else sometimes we'd have cold wars for days. No talking, just tension. And so it was awful, but I knew what we should do because everybody knows if you can't have a conversation without having a big fight, that means you should go to marriage counseling.
Yes.
So I dragged him to marriage counseling so that the counselor could fix him. And then I could finally be happy because that's how it works. But of course it didn't work. And we went for over a year. We spent $9,000. And this was a long time ago. This was in the 90s. And I remember I was sitting on the counselor's gray couch when I thought, this is not working. It's hopeless. We're too far apart. He's never going to change. And I'm either going to spend the rest of my life in a loveless relationship or else I have to get divorced. So I decided I would get divorced. But I was too embarrassed to get divorced. I had been married not that many years before. People had been at the wedding. And I really didn't want to lose status. So in desperation, I decided to ask women who had been happily married for at least 15 years what their secrets were. And they told me things that didn't make any sense to me. They sounded pretty crazy. And I was like, have you got anything else? But I decided I would experiment with these ideas because I had the wisdom of no escape at that point. I was either going to have that divorce and lose status or I could experiment. So I started doing that. And it was not even that long after I started experimenting that I walked through our door and my husband looked up and saw that I was home and his face lit up. He smiled. He was happy to see me.
Really?
Yeah. And that had been awesome. I thought, wow, this might be working. And I was very excited because I thought, now I'm going to, I know what to do. I'm going to be able to find a marriage I always wanted to have. I really wanted a good marriage real bad.
Yeah.
And so I was excited about that. And a few days, not that long after that, we were in the car and we had a fight, and it turned out to be a big fight. And I was saying horrible things to him that I knew I was going to regret later. And then he was saying horrible things right back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I thought this wasn't going to happen anymore. And then it did. And how tragic is this that I know what to do.
Right.
But I couldn't get myself to do it. And the new way wasn't so hard. It was just new. So I thought, I'm going to get some of my girlfriends and I'm going to recruit them. I'm going to show them what we're doing, because they're complaining about their marriages too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're going to have like a little support group, and maybe that'll give me what I need to really get over the hump and get some new habits, which is all we needed. And that worked. We started meeting in my living room. There was just five of us. And
oh, wow.
We're all seeing miracles in the, our marriages. They were saying, one woman said, my husband won the sales contest at work, and he took a romantic getaway of our lives.
Oh, beautiful.
That's nice. And then
Everyone
said, oh, this isn't going to sound like much, but we've been fighting for months about him painting the family room. And he got up, he painted the family room. He did it with a smile.
She's like,
that's a miracle. And we're like, okay, yeah, that's good. So then somebody said, can you write down what we're doing for my cousin in Florida? And we're in California. And I was like, all right. And that ended up being my first book, which Dateline came and did an investigation on my methods and my workshop. And the next day I woke up and that book was number one on Amazon. It was on the
New York Amazing.
Spelling list. Yeah. Wow. It was translated into 19 languages in 30 countries, started a worldwide movement accidentally. Of women who practice the six intimacy skills that lead to have more intimacy, passion, and peace in your marriage.
That is absolutely tremendous, Laura. My goodness, the strength of community, right? And everyone sharing in their own personal struggles with their marriages and just coming together as a community, talking about, you know, just tossing around some ideas, you know, and trying things and then coming back to the community and sharing, you know, findings and so forth. And I mean, God bless you and God bless those women in your community, because all of you are women fighting for your marriage, fighting for your relationship, you know? And so I guess that leads me to ask, in the book, The Empowered Wife, and I guess, the podcast as well, when I read the title, are there anecdotes and lessons and stories, and guidance of women, in suggesting how to take the initiative, in things they see wrong in their marriage? Is that?
That's exactly what it is. So I wanted, as soon as I got clarity about these intimacy skills, I thought, oh my gosh, I want to get this down on paper. Like, I want to get this into every woman's hands.
Yeah.
And end world divorce. And I thought that would be it. So I wrote it all down. So The Empowered Wife has the six intimacy skills laid out step by step. Every nuance, all my best stuff is in there. And then the stories of women who have implemented them in situations that sounded impossible. Like, he's an alcoholic. You know, he's already left and he's living with the other woman. Right. And it's great. Like, how she got him back using those skills. So, so the book has everything in it. And lots of women have had great, you know, a really good, transformation in their marriage from just having the book. But, you know, for a lot of us, like me included, the book wasn't enough. It's this community thing that you were talking about.
Yes.
That really gave me the strength and the, like, that encouragement and supervision that I needed, like accountability, right, to make those habits stick and not to get stuck. You know, I think it's very frustrating if you hear about the six intimacy skills working in everyone else's marriage and you try them and they don't exactly work in your marriage. You're like, well, oh, you know, must be, maybe my husband's different. It doesn't apply, you know, it won't work if I do this with him. And that's almost like saying, well, you know, I tried to exercise and it didn't work.
Right, right. Right.
You know, exercise, it works, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But, you know, anyway, so I'll just give you like a quick example. This one of my coaches now, actually, so she was in her second marriage, and for 6 months they'd been sleeping in separate bedrooms, and it looked really bad for their marriage. They had a blended family, 2 kids each.
Yeah.
And so she was going to marriage counseling every week by herself to complain about her husband for an hour a week, which that never works, by the way, complaining about your spouse for an hour a week. Nobody ever got happier that way. It seems like it's going to help. It doesn't help.
Right.
But she got her hands on my book and she read it, and she really had this epiphany, like, oh my gosh, maybe I have more power than I realized to affect the way things are going at my house. And she picked up one of the cheap phrases from the Six Intimacy Skills. And that's what we have, is a lot of little phrases that are kind of similar to like please and thank you. You know how you teach children to do that, so you can cultivate a grateful heart, right? So we have all these little phrases. And one of the phrases she picked up on, I'll tell you what, it came up because her husband said, hey, I need you to tell me what you want me to do with the cell phone plan. And she was the CFO of a large private school. She had a big job. And so she was managing money all day, and she was trying to help her husband, manage the finances a little bit better at home.
Right.
And, but there was a lot of tension around that. And so, she picked up this phrase and she said to him, oh, Doug, you know, whatever you think, that's the cheap phrase. And he was like, wait, what? No, you got to tell me what you want me to do. Cause he didn't want to be in trouble later if he did it
right.
Wrong,
right. 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 Yeah.
So she just repeated it. She said, no, whatever you think. And she added, I trust you.
There and you go.
Went away. Yeah. Right. Yeah. He went away going, wow, she trusts me. And she was a little nervous that he was going to mess up the cell phone plan, right? He's going to like pay too much or get a crummy service. But he did fine. And then that night he went to her and he put his hand on her shoulder and he said, you were so nice today. And that night they slept in the same bed for the first time in 6 months.
Amazing.
Yeah. And that was over 20 years ago. And she still gets tears in her eyes today when she talks about how tragic it would have been to throw out that second husband that who turns out to be, you know, the love of her life. They have a wonderful marriage to this day. So she used that one cheap phrase, that one experience to sort of springboard, you know, her marriage into what she has now, which is a really wonderful relationship.
Three simple words, you know, three simple words. And, you know, sometimes I think, you know, whoever is on the receiving end of that response, you know, whatever you think, right? It almost sounds so much like a throwaway phrase that is like, you're going to do what you're going to do anyway. So whatever you think, you know, it feels like that. It's a throwaway. But then when you come back and qualify that, right, as she did with, I trust you, then there's a sense of genuinity, right? There's a sense of authenticity in saying that, saying, no, I truly mean whatever you think, I trust you. And that goes a long way.
Oh, it does. And that's, you hit it right on the head because, you know, Doug knew that she didn't really trust him before that. Yeah. And that hurt a lot because that was her not seeing him as competent and capable. Mm-hmm. And what does a man want more than anything from his wife?
Want to be known as capable.
And competent, right?
And competent. That's right.
Right. So, so it goes a long way toward him getting what he needs and her also feeling unburdened that she doesn't have to take care of every little decision.
Yeah.
He really could take care of that for them.
I think you touched on something that is a great example of so many different circumstances that that couples have, right? And but there are common circumstances, kind of like when it comes to, I don't know, social settings. They always say two things you don't talk about in social settings are religion and politics, right? So what are some of the common areas in which are struggles for couples, finances, children, you know, but what are some that are outside of those common root causes or struggles that you've seen in your experience?
Well, I know here's an embarrassing story. So my parents are divorced, right? So mm-hmm. I was following a failed recipe. Mm-hmm. And there was no relationships 101 at my school or anything. So so I made some pretty big mistakes early on in our relationship. And one that comes to mind is my husband took us on a trip to Hawaii, like this mm-hmm. romantic getaway. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited because I thought, oh, we're going to go to the beach on the first day because I can't wait to go to the beach. I'd love to go to the beach.
Yeah.
But instead of saying that, I said to him, well, what do you want to do today? And he was like, let's go see a volcano. I think that'd be fun. And I was like, oh. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't want to have a conflict. I actually really wanted to be close. Mm-hmm. So instead of saying what I wanted, I just said, oh, okay, yeah, volcano, all right, let's do that. And then we're in the car, we're in the rental car, driving for a long way, and you don't see a volcano for a long time. There's just little molten rocks on the side of the road.
Right.
And I started to just get frustrated, you know, like, mm-hmm. at the beach right now.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
Like, he kind of noticed, he's like, is anything wrong? And I was like, do you think this is fun? Because I don't think it's fun at all. You didn't even ask me what I wanted to do, but I wanted to go to the beach.
Oh my gosh.
Poor guy. Yeah. I took her to Hawaii on a romantic getaway. Like, what just happened? I feel so sad for that younger version of myself who just had no idea how to say what she wanted. And if you can't say what you want, you're never going to get what you want.
No, you're not. And it's all a part of being intentional, right? I mean, had we known this when we were younger, you know, it could have saved a lot of anxiety and strife, but just, you know, being able to respectfully and feel confident and safe in the space in saying what you want, you know, it's not the end of the world, but we don't know that in our youth, you know?
No. And I also didn't realize, and now I know this so much, mm-hmm. but, and maybe I wouldn't have believed it when I was struggling my marriage, but you know, my husband just wants me to be happy. Like that's so important to him.
Yes.
And I've asked thousands of men, right? How mm-hmm. important it is to them that their mm-hmm. wife is happy. How important mm-hmm. is it, Aubrey?
It is absolutely 100% important. And I have a personal experience I want to share with you, but I want you to complete your point or your thought.
Well, I'm the thousands of men I've asked have all said the same thing. They say it's everything. They say it's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. In the UK, they say it's imperative.
Yes.
So we know this is like it's a worldwide thing. And so when I finally learned how to say what I wanted, I had been saying, it was with the dishes. I'd been saying things like, this kitchen is a disaster area, right? And I thought my husband was going to jump off the couch and start the kitchen, and that never happened because I didn't know what I wanted. I was just complaining. I think he might have probably heard like, John, blah, 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 blah. I probably couldn't hear the rest. And then one day I just said, hey, John, I would love a clean kitchen. I would love a clean kitchen. That was it. And there's a formula, which I'll share for expressing your desires in a way that inspires him. And that did it. And he said, oh, I'll clean it. And he did that night. Nice. And then he's been doing it ever since. And this has been over 20 years. Why? Yeah. Because it makes his wife happy.
Exactly.
And so, and then I usually, you know, I go, oh my gosh, this kitchen is so clean. This makes me so happy. And he is like, he loves it. I love it. Everyone's happy because I know how to express my desires. I have that formula for expressing my desires now.
And can you give us a glimpse into the formula?
I would love to give, especially, I feel like, especially for any woman who's listening, you need this formula, like write it down if you can. It's so powerful. So it just starts with the phrase, I would love, I would love. And then you're going to fill in the final outcome. So not who does it or how it gets done. And you don't need to add those details. You just have to figure out what it is you would want. So I'll give you an example. Like one woman, was reading about this in the book, and she got to that part and she looked up and she said, I would love a glass of wine. And her husband was like, oh, I don't think we have any wine. And she's like, I know, I was just wanting one. So no expectations there. And next thing she knows, he's coming downstairs with his keys and the kids behind him going, can I go to the store too? And she goes, where are you going? He goes, I'm going to the store to get you some wine. Like, you know, he saw an opportunity to be her hero, right?
Yes, yes.
I would love, and then the final outcome, and you don't want to necessarily, I would discourage you from using this for anything like, I want a hug, or I want to spend time together, or I want your attention. Because when you implement the six intimacy skills, you become an irresistible magnet where, like now I'll see it. I'll be working on my laptop on the couch and he comes and he has to sit right next to me, even though I'm not going to pay any attention to him and he doesn't care. He just wants to be right next to me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's an irresistible magnetism, or I'll just be passing him in the hall and he's got to, you know, pull me in and kiss me or something.
Of course.
You don't need to ask for those things when you've got all the intimacy skills. But if you're like most women, you want a lot of other things, right? Like I want a lot of things,
right?
And that's fine. And for that, you want to express your desires in a way that inspires.
Express your desires in a way that inspires.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that phrase. I really love that phrase. I mean, it says it all, you know, and it's so succinct, right? And you're right. I mean, men want nothing more than to make their wives happy, their significant others happy. And I appreciate you sharing that formula. And in a few minutes, I'd love to go into the six skills of intimacy, you know, at a high level. I don't want to sell the whole farm because I want the listeners to dive deeper into, you know, your work. But I want to share with you a personal experience that my wife and I had, okay, in the early years of our marriage. And I don't know if I'm just, Laura, I'll be honest, I don't know if I'm just sharing this to get any thoughts or feedback, although it's definitely welcome, or just something I wanted to share because we're talking about married couples and happiness and how important it is for men to make their wives happy. Okay. Again, this is based on my personal experience. There was a point in our marriage, my wife and I, when we had some struggles and we went to Christian marriage counseling, which happened to be our church's elder couple. And one of the eye-opening lessons that they told us, it was hugely eye-opening for me and my wife, is the fact that we can't, realistically, we can't count on each other for 100% of each other's happiness, okay? Meaning she can't count on me for hers, I can't count on her for mine. And to realize there will be times that we will fall short of each other's expectations and disappoint one another, you know? Now, obviously, I'm no relationship expert by any means, but hearing this gave us both a huge amount of relief from anxiety and stress and the pressure, right? Of making the other 100% happy and meeting their expectations. That doesn't mean you let up, okay, or get complacent. I mean, it doesn't mean that at all in my mind. That's how I took it. You know, you still love each other and want to work to make each other happy, but don't give yourself the pressure of it having to be 100% because it just won't happen that way. And I just wanted to share, that's a huge realization that we've learned, and having the security of a relationship and knowing that of each other, you know, that doesn't mean it's the end of the world. That doesn't mean it's the end of the relationship because it's just something that realistically won't be attained. We don't love each other any less. We don't make each other happy any less. It's just, to me, it was a huge relief.
It is a huge relief, isn't it? Because it's absolutely true. And this is, this really points right back to another big mistake that I was making early in my marriage, which was thinking that if I wasn't happy, it's because he wasn't making me happy. Mm-hmm. And of kind of being stuck, like making that sour face, like, you know, I'm not happy. And so that he would, thinking that that would be the feedback he needed to improve them out. I mean, even say it, so embarrassing, right? Because that's not how it works. But I thought that if I got happy when he was like falling short, that would send like the wrong message. Mm-hmm. And then I would never get what I wanted in my marriage. And it's turned out to be just the opposite, that when I take responsibility for my own happiness.
Yes.
And I show up, you know, like the woman he fell in love with, which is the one who's always like singing, dancing in the kitchen or whatever, smiling, laughing. I know he fell in love with my laugh. Uh-huh. And then he wants to pile on. Then he's like, oh, look, you know, like, what else can I do to make you happy? You know?
Yeah.
I remember one husband was talking about this. He's like, yeah, I fixed a cabinet for my wife and she was so happy. He was like, I was looking around like, what else can I break around here so that I can make her happy? So to your point, it is absolutely a relief. And it was a stretch for me. Like I'd been committed to my misery.
You
know, if you get happy, it kind of took a little, I resisted that a little bit, but it is actually the very first intimacy skill is to replenish your spirit by making yourself ridiculously happy in frivolous ways we talk about. Right. Yeah. So, I remember I had a student who, the first thing we ask them to do when they get to the campus is make a list of 20 things that bring you joy, that just make you feel good, just for frivolous fun, not because it improves your cardio fitness or reduces carbon emissions or whatever, just fun. Mm-hmm. And she got to about 4 and she was like, oh my gosh, I don't know anymore. Mom and, but like thinking about work and paying the bills and the chores, she kind of had forgotten herself. And so, but as she made that list and got clear on the things that she liked to do, you know, she was out walking and listening to podcasts and getting together with her friends. And and then all of a sudden she was listening to a podcast she loves and she was folding the laundry and her husband came over to her and he wanted to talk to her. And she was almost like, wait, I'm listening to my podcast right now. But she's I always wanted him to do this.
Love it.
But it was a magnet because she was happy. So it really drew him right to her. And that's what we see again and again.
Gotcha. And you said that was the first
The first intimacy skill. Making that list of 20 things and then doing at least 3 a day for your own happiness. And I mean, we have students, I've had students say, well, I'm really busy. I can only do like 3 a week. And I'm like, well, your life is going by here and it would be a shame to miss it, you know? So, and you're giving your marriage very little chance to succeed if you don't have time to make yourself happy. It's hard to implement the other skills if you don't do that, if you don't have the resources in you. Mm-hmm. But some of the other skills help you have more time so that you can also pay attention to that that replenishing of your spirit.
Beautiful, beautiful. Oh, thank you for sharing that insight. I mean, that first insight sounds very foundational, right?
It is. Yeah. It certainly is.
Yeah.
You really can't go on to anything else until.
Makes a lot of sense.
I mean, it's not as easy as it sounds. It can actually be challenging to start making yourself happy. Mm-hmm. Especially, let's say your marriage is really falling apart like mine was. You think like, oh, wait, how am I? I'm unhappy because my marriage is falling apart. Like, I can't just start being happy. And it's like, well, you know, what if you were happy first? What if you just made his head explode and yours just getting happy first? As an experiment, we can try that. And now that we've helped thousands of women, my coaches and I, fix their marriages that seemed like they were hopeless. We see that can be a really effective way to get started.
Oh, for sure. Now that notion you just mentioned there, Laura, when you're in the throes of a struggling marriage, that notion right there comes across as quite counterintuitive, right? Yeah, it really does. And again, having the open-mindedness and the willingness to try it, you know, to give it a try. You got to take that first step.
You do. You really do. Yeah.
Yeah. So Laura, I'm curious. And if there's no such thing, just tell me, okay? Is there one fact or finding about men that women just have to face and accept? And conversely, is there just one fact or finding about women that men just need to face and accept?
Well, I kind of love that question because it leads me to something else that I was sorely missing in my early relationship. I just had no concept. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was raised knowing, you know, that I should do this, but I did not know what it meant. And even to this day, I'll be writing a blog or something about this. And just to my female brain, it's still kind of like, this is so weird. But it's, I think, where men live, and just having a little more understanding of it has been so helpful. And that is, and I'll tell you a quick story about this. So my husband and I were out to dinner. He took me out to a really nice swanky restaurant on Saturday night where it's all packed out and the bar is over there and people are laughing and the waiters are flying around and everybody's just having a great time. We're having a great time. Mm-hmm. And he's telling me about his business and he's telling me about this one client. And I made a comment and I was really kind of saying like, you shouldn't give that client favorable treatment. I didn't like that. I didn't want it. So I was telling him how to run his business, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like the music stopped, the bar got quiet, the waiter stopped. My husband gets this look on his face and our good time is gone. And I'm like, oh my, what just happened? What just happened here? Yeah. And I wasn't quite ready to be accountable yet, you know, but I kind of got there. And then I was like, oh, I go, was what I said just now, I go, was that disrespectful? And he goes, yeah. And I was like, oh. And then I got there. I was like, okay, I apologize for being disrespectful.
I see.
I told you how to run your company. And all of a sudden, the music came back and the laughter started and the waiters were. And
I'll pick back up.
Right? Instead of it being like escalating into a big blow up and maybe being a tense night and we go home and the good time's over.
Yeah.
The good time came right back. And it was because I now have this superpower. I know when I'm being respectful and when I'm not. I used to think that I was respectful. But I think if you would ask me, I'd be like, I respect my husband except for the way he dresses and the way he drives. And he's not healthy, right? It's like, oh, no concept, right?
Yeah.
So I think for me, it was just a big eye-opener to find out that what being respectful really looks like, that it looks like expecting the best of my husband, not the worst. Yeah. Right. And treating him like he is capable and competent and not being like his smother mother who tells him how he should do things, like how he should run his company.
Yeah.
What do I know about running his company? He's at it for, you know, decades and he doesn't need help.
I tell you what, Laura, I so truly and genuinely appreciate you sharing that because, again, personally, my wife, she finds herself now that we've had a discussion about it, kind of falling into that groove of telling me how to do something or when we're driving, you know, are you going to pass that truck or we could park here, we could park there. And I know, and I used to get really frustrated about it. And I know in her heart of hearts, she's just truly trying to help, but she's strong-willed and she is used to, you know, being able to speak her mind like that. And I don't want to break any spirit where you don't can't speak your mind. Right. So like 2 weekends ago, we were cleaning out our barn. And so once the barn was all cleaned out, you know, I told her, I said, I think it's time to put all this stuff out on the end of the street, of the driveway. So I'll take care of that. And then she starts going into, well, you know, yeah, that's cool. If I would stack the plastic containers up first and then maybe the bags and so forth. And I looked at her and I said, do you want to do it? You know? And so when we had a deeper conversation about this, and this was a while back, and she gardens, okay, she has a beautiful garden, and I do the grunt work, of course, you know, shoveling holes, lifting wheelbarrows of dirt and everything. And so she says, I'm almost afraid to like tell you what or how to do this in the garden. And I had to stop her and say, hey, look, this is your garden. This is your, you know, what you love to do. I'm just helping you. I don't know as much about gardening as you do. So please tell me, you know, if you want me to spread the dirt in a certain way, tell me how you want me to do it. I won't be offended. I need that knowledge because this is your expertise, not mine. It doesn't take any expertise to throw away a bunch of junk from a barn. So, you know, I don't need to be told how to do that. I've dealt with garbage ever since I was a kid taking things out. And so I wanted to differentiate for her, you know, when I need that instruction for on how to do something versus when I don't, if that makes sense.
Totally. And I love, what a great example, what a great illustration. And especially in the garden, one of the things I hear is you wanted to know how to make her happy. What are her desires? Right. Like I would love to have a bunch of fertilizer right here, but to keep it off of this part where I'm trying to whatever. Right.
So exactly.
So the more sure she could be about her desires, the more successful you will be being her hero who fulfills those desires.
Absolutely. And that kind of brings me to the question I wanted to ask you, Laura, about characteristics of a thriving, successful marriage. What are some of the characteristics at a high level you can describe them that one would see in a thriving, successful marriage? They all require work and continuous work, but you know, if it's at that level, what are some of those characteristics?
Well, I was also always taught that it takes a lot of work. You know, your marriage takes a lot of work. And what's interesting is now that I have the right training, the right information, the right support of the community of women that I still rely on to this day, more than 20 years later, to keep my marriage shiny and amazing, like I like it. my marriage just feels like my soft place to land. It doesn't like where I go to find out that I'm beautiful, I'm wonderful, I'm amazing, right? To be showered with kisses or special treatment. So in some ways, I guess that's one of the hallmarks. I think another hallmark of a great marriage, like one of the ways I can tell that a couple has a wonderful marriage is when I'm talking to the wife, if she's telling me what a great man she's married to, right? Which is a form of respect, right? She's saying he would do anything for me, or he's my best friend, or such a good man. He really takes care of me. My hairdresser was just doing this recently, and I was like, oh, you've got a good marriage. I can tell.
Really? That's great.
And the converse is also true, right?
When
I meet her, she's like, oh, you know, he's a narcissist, or, and I mean, all of these diagnoses, right, we have now, or he's got ADHD, or he, you know, he's an alcoholic, or, right, or there's a lot of labels you can put on your person. And what's interesting is, you know, every woman, thought she was marrying her prince on her wedding day, right? We all have to marry him. So there's a reason she chose him, and that reason is still in him. So for me, a lot of times I'm saying, you know, look, you married a good man. Let's try to remember what that was that attracted you to him and made you want to marry him, because we've all got our pluses and minuses. Nobody's like all perfect, right?
No,
it's kind of a matter of choosing your faith instead of your fear, and really focusing on the experience you want to have from your husband instead of the one you don't want to have, which I think in some ways, you know, I know I came with some baggage, right? We all do. Right. That I had before I met my husband, where I was like, see, you're doing it again. And like, I had this little routine going before I ever met him. So we have a lot of success with helping women choose their focus wisely, and then saying, wow, this is, you know, It sounds kind of incredible, especially when your marriage is falling apart.
Right.
And that's so painful and hard and scary.
Oh,
but the promise on the other side is I have the marriage of my dreams. No marriage is perfect, but boy, this one really feels good. And that's what we hear from our students all the time, is they're amazed how far they could get single-handedly, because we don't help men and we don't help couples. We only help women fix their marriages.
Gotcha. And it sounds like you kind of touched on it earlier. There's some degree of rediscovery that happens, right? That man that she fell in love with in the early stages of their relationship is in there somewhere, right? And how do we rediscover that and get that in a way to where we can cultivate that from him, I guess.
And she may unwittingly have been disrespectful. Like, she didn't know she was.
Didn't mean.
She didn't mean to. Yeah. Or she could have, like in my marriage, when I was trying to help him be more ambitious and more romantic and all those things, I didn't know that helpful in wife language equals critical in husband languages. Equals, first put the plastic pieces and stack those. And
yes,
then,
yes. Exactly.
That's a big insult is what that is. Doesn't seem like it to us from our standpoint. We're just being helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's so true. And I had to practice some empathy with myself and understanding she is just trying to be helpful. And I don't know, kind of selfishly, I just kind of shared how I interpret it. Not saying it's right or wrong.
It's a great illustration of, another piece of that story is like, you're like, I'll do it. I'll do all the hard labor. I'll do all the hard labor for your garden and for cleaning our barn, right? And this is servant's heart that I see so many men, if not all men, are come to their relationships with. And it's a beautiful, wonderful thing. And I love how complimentary it is to our because I desire to be taken care of. That's one of the things I like to have. And my husband wants to take care of me, just like I hear you taking care of your wife. So it's just such so discouraging if that criticism sneaks in there when you're just trying to take care of her. This is feeling taken care of because you're reacting defensively because you're feeling criticized, right? It's a whole big misunderstanding. We can get back to passionate and playful pretty quickly.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, once you're mindful of that and where this is going, right? Whether it's a conversation or an argument or just an event, cleaning out of a barn or helping with gardening, if we're mindful of what direction it's going, we can kind of stop and check ourselves and say, all right, we see where this is going. Do we want it going there? Probably not. What can we do to kind of reel this in, right? I just want to feel, and to me, it's a positive cycle. If I feel that my wife thinks she trusts me and she thinks that I am competent and capable, then I'll go to great lengths, to do what I need to do to make her feel safe, make her feel like she's not alone in the maintenance of the house and all this stuff. And know she has a partner, and when she shows me that respect and shows me that she trusts me and thinks I'm competent, then that's how I respond in terms of, doing those things. And it just helps everyone, all around. Now, conversely, I have to show her that I love and appreciate her. I'm grateful for her. I don't take anything she does for me for granted. And then of course reciprocate that is what I've learned, I guess, in our journey, and do it gladly, right? Happily. It's not a chore. It's not all because I'm in this role.
How hard is it to adore your wife when she is treating you like you're so capable and competent? She's so grateful.
Easy.
Right? So, yeah. Is there anything more attractive than that?
No. And there was a song written many years ago called "Easy to Love." You're easy to love, you know. And to me, that just says it all. It's one of the things that just says it all. Laura, wow, what a great conversation. And I know we can talk for hours. I want to ask you, how can the listeners follow you, learn more about your great work, subscribe to your podcast, and maybe even pick up a copy of your book?
Well, we have something really great. I wanted to do something special for the listeners of the Road to Rediscovery podcast.
Oh, great.
So we made up, and I've got a few little goodies there for everybody. You can go to get, we have the Adored Wife Roadmap there, and of course, a link to the podcast, and we have the Bear Success Kit, all free resources that you can get at lauradoyle.org/road. So it's just for your listeners. Yeah.
Exclusive.
Absolutely.
For the listeners of the Road to Rediscovery.
Yeah.
Laura, I can't thank you enough for that. And we will definitely have these links in the episode show notes. As I share this throughout the networks, we will emphasize this, right? So much appreciated. Was there any other avenues or areas?
I mean, you know, obviously for podcast listeners, everyone can listen to The Empowered Wife at Apple, podcasts, everywhere podcasts are available, but go and check out lauradoyle.org/road so you can get all the goodies for being a listener to the Road to Rediscovery podcast.
Oh, wonderful. Fantastic. Laura, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and really sharing and being so generous with your insight for the listeners. We have a lot of listeners who are going through such huge adversities, and a lot of those include struggle marriages and feeling like they've reached an impasse. So I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing that.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. It's been an honor to be on your show. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you, Laura. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And hey, look, if you have a loved one, a colleague, a neighbor, friend, or coworker who just doesn't seem to be themselves, maybe going through some dark days of despair, not quite sure where to turn or who to turn to, I humbly ask that you please share this show with them, because on the Road to Rediscovery, we want our listeners to know two things. Number one, you're not alone. And two, there is always hope. Mm-hmm. The Road to Rediscovery, it's a movement, a revolution. And guess what? You are now part of it. We're all roadies on this journey of life. And it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.